the first day, I think I ended up and drove for something like 20 hours. And I got into the hotel at 12:30.
Covered in moss. Obviously not being used for years. Tell the receptionist, came out, got in it and drove off.
Well, hello and welcome to another edition of the Classics World Chat Show. We get to blither on mindlessly about our favourite classic cars. So, as ever, I'm joined by Jeff Ruggles.
Hello.
And Joe Miller.
Hello.
So, gentlemen, we always start at the top of the chat show with a little bit of news. Now, Classic Car Buyer 27th of May was a double issue. So, actually, Jeff has had a week off. He's not had to put a paper to bed. It doesn't quite feel like that because actually the way the schedule works is it's typically only about 7 days still to put the next issue to bed. There's probably some topics that we could at least cover off. So any thoughts, Jeff, what we got to discuss?
I'll start actually with something that happened a couple of weeks ago. But I just want to talk about the Bewley Auto Jumbo because it had a really, the Spring Auto Jumbo had a really bumper attendance. So it was up on last year. I think it's around 14,000. Kind of feel like there's a resurgence in vintage markets and rummaging through car parts rather than buying online because I don't know what to liken it to, but all these celebrities now, they're making a big thing of them going back to wired headphones.
Yeah.
Instead of having AirPods and things like that. So I wonder if this is kind of the same thing at work, is that we want to go back to how we used to buy parts maybe 20 years ago before everything went online.
There's a simplicity to it, isn't there? It's like people who listen to music on, I mean, even cassette tapes are making a resurgence now. And like you say, there's a lot of people aren't entirely happy with the way the world is at the moment. And we won't get political, but there's a lot of things to not like about the world in general at the moment. And I think people are trying to, like you say, they're trying to look back to a simpler time. And even if it's a time that, I mean, me, for example, I'm far too young to be nostalgic about the time the Auto Jumbo heralds from, but I can appreciate it. And I think that's the thing. Like you say, a lot of people are liking the older style, more simple way. I think it's fantastic.
I just think it would. They've got quite a lot of nice new features and things like that, like a classic car part. But essentially, you know, it's about the exhibitors, isn't it?
And what the, and actually, I don't know if this is still true, Jeff, but from memory, the September one was always bigger than the May one, so it bodes well for the autumn one as well, doesn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. But I think it's just what appeals to me about it is that when you're at an auto jumble or a vintage market or something like that, you buy the thing you're not necessarily looking for. And I know that's almost a terrible way to spend money, but you just find those sort of hidden treasures that you weren't seeking out to find. And when you go on eBay, as useful as eBay is, you're specifically looking for something generally. Whereas these auto jumbles, I might end up with, I've ended up with so many new old stock wheel bearings. I don't know what I'm going to do with them, but there's a certain, I don't know, I find a certain pleasure in that.
Yeah, it's almost like going to a charity shop in some ways, isn't it? You very rarely go into a charity shop looking for something specific, but it's what you find. I was at an auto jumble once and there was a guy carrying around like a 7-foot canvas print of Ayrton Senna. And I'm like, you didn't come in for that, did you?
That's it. I don't think I could fit that out of a car, but...
No, exactly. Okay.
But of course, the other thing we were going to talk about this morning, I think, is something that Phil touched on. It was a sort of disparity now between running an 80s classic or a 90s classic, you know, a tax exempt classic versus something a bit more modern from the 1990s and the extra costs in sort of taxing it, finding parts, availability in the first place, Phil, because that's something you really noticed, wasn't it?
Obviously, 80s classics, certainly anything up to 86 is now tax exempt and MOT exempt as well. So it has those early 80s classics have that benefit here in the UK at least. But what was also astounding is that the 90s classics, there seemed to be fewer of them, and the market values were half, if not more so, than their 80s counterpart. So I don't know what that sort of tells us at the moment. Maybe that is because the peak interest is in those 80s cars. Maybe they've survived in greater numbers, certainly in terms of whether they're in good condition or not. Maybe the 90s cars the numbers were reduced because of scrappage. The scrappage scheme in 2009.
I think you've hit the nail on the head there, definitely.
Lots of 90s cars went west then, didn't they?
The great thing about that price disparity is you can knock it on its head and call it an opportunity, can't you?
Absolutely.
And that's what's happening for a lot of events like Festival in Unexceptional and things like that, is that, you know, these cheaper cars give people a way in.
Yeah, definitely.
The winning car in 25 was a £1,400 car. So
yeah. Now, like I say, I mean, I think last week, Jeff, you mentioned the Ford Puma as your underrated classic. I mean, there's a 90s classic that's going to have its day one day, but right now you can still buy them relatively affordably. And even if it's a rotten example, that you don't mind keeping in a garage and sort of steadily restoring it, it's going to probably be worth more in a few years' time. I mean, it's always a risky game to play, and that's not why we want to buy classic cars. We want to buy them because we want to enjoy them rather than speculate on them. But yes, the disparity between 80s and 90s classics seems to be quite marked at the moment.
I think, like you said, to put a positive spin on it, like you say, Jeff, is that a lot of the 90s stuff is not only quite, I wouldn't say plentiful, but easier to track down then than a lot of the 80s stuff, I think it's fair to say. But also, like you say, because you're not fighting as many people for it, it's cheaper to get into, cheaper to run. I mean, Paul Wager has just had an MGF, and a new wheel bearing for it was £8, you know, and things like that. And it's like, well, the MGF is a great example of that. They're everywhere. You can easily get them under £1,000. They do 40 to the gallon on a run if you tickle it. And the parts are still everywhere. They've got a great community behind them. Yes, it's not an MGB. It's not what some people would coin a proper classic. But if you want to get into the world of old cars, that's fantastic.
Yeah, no, it is. The only thing that's sort of like the negative is obviously the road tax, which then gets worse as you get into the 2000s, of course.
Yes, so, it does.
And especially worse after 2006. So that is something that's obviously going to come into play. And that's why so many people have argued for some kind of reduction in modern classics that aren't getting used that much. That is a barrier to ownership, in my opinion. Not sure what will be done about it. Probably nothing, but
we should probably caveat this with two points. Is that one, obviously, this is very specifically a UK issue. Those of you watching or listening abroad, this doesn't apply to you. But also, there will be people that, yes, it's not technically called road tax, but you know what we mean. You know the point we're making.
Yeah, we do, yeah.
But it does apply to a lot of cars. So as a good example, my Fiat Seicento, which is a 1.1 city car, the size of a postage stamp, I'm now paying £260 a year to tax. You know, that's... Wow. That's crazy when you think about it. And for a car that's only worth £500 in monetary terms, most likely, a lot of people would just scrap it on the strength of that. You know, so it is, I think, like you say, that alone could see a lot of cars of that era thrown away, potentially.
You raise a good point, actually, Joe, about overseas. I don't know enough about what the tax situation is like for owning certain cars. I know in certain countries, it's all about the size of the engine and all that kind of stuff. And big posh luxury cars often get penalised in places like France and Australia, I think. So I'd love to hear from any viewers and listeners about their tax situation at home. So it'd be really good to compare and contrast, because that'd be really good to hear. But anyway, well, look, let's move on to something far more enjoyable, because Jeff, you in particular are a sucker for a road trip. And I wanted to indulge you, but also the rest of us, in our dream road trip. So what I want us to do is I want us to go down a rather scenic memory lane and us to recount a memorable road trip that we've experienced. And I then also want you to nominate a road trip that you would like to do and the car that you would like to do it in. So, Jeff, you're the one that's probably done the more miles in some crazy stuff. Limiting it to one was probably quite hard, I imagine, but give it a go. What was your most memorable road trip?
It is really hard to break it down to one, because we've had some really good adventures, both sort of within work, if you like, and outside of it. But the one that probably sticks in the mind, because it was completely unexpected. So back in 2019, a little appeal went out on Facebook. Remember that, kids? For 3 minis, red, white, and blue, to join the E-Type Club on a 50th anniversary trip to Turin to celebrate the Italian job. And I just happened to have a blue Mini. It was all blue, no white roof or anything like that. So I threw my name into the hat, and I was picked to go with two teams I'd never met, basically, in a red Mini and a white Mini. And they turned out to be fantastic people. And the trip was just so unexpected. So, you know, we did a tour of all the Italian job landmarks and sites in Turin, the famous church, you know, inside all of the buildings, you know, all these wonderful sites. But the thing that really sort of sticks in the mind is the journey back to Aosta, which went through some of the Alpine routes, sort of straddling the Italian, Swiss and French borders. You know, places like Val d'Isère, they're completely different. They're a little bit dead, but the roads, just fantastic. Over the Alps into Switzerland, stayed in Troyes in France, which was a really wonderful city. There were people with E-types, there were us with minis, but there was no barrier between us. We all mixed really well, and they had their obviously very expensive E-types. I had a 400 quid Mini that I'd obviously 4,000s into since, but it just encapsulated the variety of the classic car scene and how, you know, we're all there for the same thing, really, when you break it down, just for the enjoyment. It was just brilliant. Okay, yes, there were 5-star hotels. We got to stay in the Lingotto Hotel, which has the track on the roof, and we got to go on the roof.
You drove up there, didn't you?
Yeah, and I'd never been able to drive on it in anger before, and you can't now because it's a garden, but just so many memories. It's difficult to even believe it happened because there were so many different little elements. I mean, even there, you reminded me of going up on the roof, and I hadn't even really considered that, but that was obviously one of the highlights, and there were so many. But yeah, one of the best trips ever. I didn't stop banging on about it for ages, so I apologize for banging on about it again, but it was just brilliant.
It sounds lovely, and in many ways what you've conveyed there is also the ubiquitous appeal of a Mini, the fact that it can stand shoulder to shoulder with an E-Type.
For those of you watching, have you got a picture of it behind you on the wall there, Jeff?
Yes, I have. So it's a friend of mine did an illustration. Well, a friend of a friend, really talented guy, did an illustration. So mine is the blue one. And of course, that E-Type that was driven by Philip Porter on this particular trip is the one from the Italian Job. So
brilliant.
Pretty cool, really.
That is very cool. So Joe, go on and follow up with that one, sir.
Well, from one big trip in a small car to another. So for those of you that are not aware, I've had my little Fiat Seicento sporting since I was 17. It was my first car. I've had it ever since. And when I was about 19 or 20, I was made aware of a club in Poland, which is big on Fiat Cinquecentos and Seicentos because they were built in Poland. They weren't built in Italy. They were built in a town called Tychy in Poland. Very appropriate. I was made aware of like a 4-day-long festival this club were running where there was going to be music and there was going to be partying and there was going to be a bit of a parade around the local town and just a big celebration of small Fiats because over there, for a lot of people in Poland, that was what got the country moving. You know, they were mass, you know, they're an iconic car to them, like the Mini is to us. You know, it's that kind of thing. And I thought, I want a part of that. So I booked in a spot for it and me and a couple of friends with Seicentos were like, oh, we're going to do this, booked in, blah, blah, blah. I then proceeded to swap my engine with 3 weeks to go, because why wouldn't you? Got it all sorted, everything else. Bearing in mind, at this point, I'd only driven abroad once. I'd never driven abroad on my own. I'd never been to Poland. I didn't speak any Polish. I had minimal preparations. And the only people I knew were the two people I was going with who I'd only met on Facebook that I didn't actually know in person. So, you know, well prepared. And then the day before the trip, as if it wasn't stressful enough, I got a text from the guy I was supposed to be driving with who goes, my car won't run right and I can't make it. So you're on your own. So with less than 24 hours to go, I had 1,000 miles to do to Poland completely solo. So I thought, well, in for a penny, we're booked in, let's just do it. And what followed was 2 days of driving through Europe in my tiny little car, completely on my own. But what an adventure it was, because the whole time, every milestone is an achievement, you know, each country border. And as you got further and further, this tiny little car, and then people would drive past and see the British number plates and give a thumbs up on the way past and everything else. Just seeing that car doing what it was doing, and it did not put a foot wrong. It never got hot, never leaked anything, never ran funny. It was perfect. And did nearly 50 to the gallon. It was amazing. And that, it put a huge smile on my face just doing it. The first day, I think I ended up drove for something like 20 hours straight, and I got into the hotel at 12:30. Not recommended. The event was amazing. The Polish people were some of the nicest people I've ever met. So warming, so welcoming. And we did all sorts of silly stuff. You know, we had a rev competition where it was who could make the most noise. And the police were great because they shut down the local village for us to do like a parade around the town, which you wouldn't get away with in this country. And it was doing a burnout down a Polish high street while half a dozen other Seicentos were doing the same thing. If I hadn't filmed it, I wouldn't be convinced it actually happened.
Sounds wonderful, and probably explains why you're so attached to your Seicento to this day.
Yeah, I absolutely loved it. The return journey was not so good. I won't go into all the details, but basically I was in an accident on the way home, which wrote my car off in Germany, and I had to fly back and get the car transported back. But like you say, Phil, the sentimental value meant too much at that point, because people went, oh, we'll just move on and get something else. Like, no, we're not done here. You can't end it like that. So I bought another Seicento, reshelled my original car, moved everything over, did a load of bits and pieces, and the following year went back and did it again, did the whole road trip again. It was just epic. It was to do thousands of miles across Europe in 30 degree heat in that tiny little car that everyone would write off was fabulous. And it was brilliant. And I just loved it.
I think you sum up the appeal of it there, because with the Mini trips, you know, you just united a whole bunch of people from different cultures because of your car. but you also see things and go places that you wouldn't because of your car. So I just think, you hit the nail on the head of how magical that is.
It's wonderful, isn't it? I think that's really special, and that you can't buy those memories now. They're locked in. There, you've got those forever. Do you know what I mean?
What really hammers out to me, I made the point at the time, and I always do, that buy an old car rather than finance a new one, you know, because it's more interesting. And like, if I'd gone down the normal route at 17 of financing a Fiesta or a Corsa or whatever, I wouldn't have gone to that event because it wouldn't have been relevant. So I wouldn't have made those memories. So having an old car that most people would just dismiss, that's what made that possible for me. And that's why I still have that car. And I still have those it's absolutely fabulous. And
very good.
Jeff, will appreciate doing big miles in a small car. It does shorten your life, but it also makes it more special.
Yeah. I've done some very, very silly things. I think Charleroi to Slovenia was quite a bad one.
Yeah.
Like you guys, I've been very lucky to have gone on a few trips over the years, so picking one was relatively hard, but I'm going to go with probably a fairly obvious one because it's a bit sort of bucket list stuff, and that's I've been lucky to take or be involved in the Mille Miglia 3 times, 1,000 miles around Italy. The first time I did it was 2004, I think, and initially I was invited over purely to drive a support vehicle. So basically Jaguar Daimler Heritage Trust, I think, had a party of cars going over. And all I was then meant to do initially was an X-type estate, following the cars around. Basically, there was a mechanic on board and I would just be the driver. But I did have to take the XKSS to scrutineering on the first day in Brescia. So driving it through Brescia, utterly terrifying, superbly exhilarating, an absolute memorable experience. The looks, the sort of nods of appreciation, the sort of the other cars on that kind of... that trip, as you can imagine, Porsches, Mercedes, Ferraris. We then got underway. You drive hell for leather through some gorgeous Italian countryside. Driving around Rome is always a bit of a character building exercise. And then for slightly tragic reasons, there was an accident on one of the stages. And it meant that I did have to jump into and help navigate one of the other cars. So I was partnered up with a guy called Gary Bartlett with his D-Type, and I was his navigator for one of the legs. And it was without doubt one of the most memorable experiences of my life, because when we pulled into Florence one evening in this D-Type, the weather was glorious. It was that lovely, one of those sort of lovely summer's evenings. So the peak heat of the day had just dissipated, so it was still warm. Dusk, we arrived and the crowds are still lining the streets, and we pull up in this D-Type. It felt magical. And the Italians, whether it's just, a kid with his family in the street or the police, they just loved it. They love the event. They support the event. They encourage it. And it's just enthusiasm. And a bit like you were saying, Jeff, when you get to meet different people from different backgrounds, even though it's a fairly hoity-toity event, you get enthusiasts from across the spectrum there, whether they love Jaguars or Ferraris or whatever, they were all there. It was truly a memorable trip, and I was then lucky enough to do it a couple of times sort of after that. But I think it was magical. I guess before we get on to our dream road trips, one thing I'd really like to take from this is that I think a dream road trip doesn't have to be a fancy bells and whistles trip to Italy or to Poland or anything. It can also just be near where you live. And I think it can be in a £500 classic or a £5 million classic, but just to go out and enjoy your classic car, I think it's really important. It's
absolutely
honey on the soul, that is, to be able to do that. And I encourage everyone to find that opportunity, whatever it is, however long it takes and however much it costs. Go and find your joy in driving your classic somewhere memorable.
Yeah, I would echo that. I think any journey you can do somewhere, it will never be more memorable than if you do it in a car. And particularly if it's a car that you own and you care about and you get that bond with it, that's fantastic. And, you know, I don't know that many people's dream road trip would be driving a Fiat Seicento 1,000 miles to Poland, but the bond I had with my car by the end of it was absolutely like that, you know, and that's what makes cars, that's what makes you bond with it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So listen, dream road trip time. You've got to pick a road trip and a car you want to do it in. And Jeff, I'm probably going to wager it's going to be a Mini, but I don't know.
I mean, I have to sort of revisit the past a little bit to give this some context. But I've been a long way in my beloved Mini Sprite that I've had for 20 years now. I've been over 25 countries. And in about 2010, I ended up going to a mini event in Serbia called the Balkan Mini Day, or Balkanska Mini Jada. And that was really nice because it sent me to the Balkan area that I'd never explored before. And of course, you know, obviously 15 years previously to that, there was a war going on. So it was an area that I hadn't really thought about going to, hadn't really thought about exploring, but this mini event took me there. And I went through Croatia, and over the years I've basically revisited several times. I've been, like I say, through Croatia, Serbia, Bosnia, Montenegro. And I found that the car I was in really opened doors. I was allowed across borders that I shouldn't have been going across. One guy invited me to his mandolin festival, little things like that, just because of the car I was in. At one point, we memorably went to a scrapyard because we wanted a roof rack, on a retro roof rack. And the guy looked at me like, a, you know, who's this guy? And then just glanced over my shoulder, saw my car, and then the whole thing changed. You know, I was invited in for spirits at 11 o'clock in the morning and things like that. But it just completely changed. And I found this happened so much. So I've fallen in love with the Balkans, and we're going on a family holiday there this summer. But what I'd really like to do is push the envelope a bit further. So I'd like to go explore into Albania, drive right through Albania, possibly to Greece, just push it further. Maybe on the other side of Serbia, head into Romania, do the Transfer-Garrison Highway or something like that. Just that Balkan area, I want to see more of it. And it is predictable, but because of what I've experienced in the past, it would be in that car again, in that blue Mini Sprite.
That's brilliant. Do you know what, even just listening to you talk about it has got my enthusiasm for it. Yeah, I think that'd be fun.
There were some hurdles. I mean, I had to get insurance on the Serbian border, a green card that was probably not valid for anything and cost me 150 euros and things like that. But actually, over the years, it's got a lot easier as things have kind of come together, and that no longer happens. You might have thought of somewhere like Albania as a tricky place to take your car years ago, but not now. It's a real up and coming country, and I'd love to take the car there.
Sounds great. Sounds very good. What about you, Joe?
Again, I'll continue with Jeff's theme of wanting to do another journey in a small car that means a lot to me. So as we listen to this, I've owned my little Fiat for 11 years now. I passed my driving, next month I passed my driving test in it 10 years ago. So, you know, to some of you listening, that's not a long time, I know, but go with me on this. The sentimental one, I wanted to do something to celebrate that kind of anniversary for me in the car. My dream road trip for a long time, and all going well, fingers crossed and touch wood, I will be able to make it happen this year. I want to do the NC500, which, for those of you that aren't aware, that massive 500-mile route, the very top of Scotland, arguably some of the most beautiful scenery in the world. And every picture I see of it and every YouTube video I see of it, and when they went there on the Grand Tour in those old Italian classics, and everything I see of it and just think, that looks wonderful. That looks like something out of a film. And you see the mountains in the distance and all the rest of it, and it's just fabulous. That, from what I gather from talking to people, it's not the kind of route where you're going to be doing 10 tents everywhere because of the type of roads and the size of the roads and the fact there's going to be tourists and so on. But just the experience of it would be wonderful. And yes, it's a long way to get there. You know, for me to get there is going to be a 10 or 11 or 12 hour drive through England. So it's not going to be an easy one, but the reward at the end is going to be worth it tenfold in my eyes. So yeah. NC500. When I think road trip, that picture comes into my mind. And particularly, we only did it in print. We didn't actually do a video about it. You, Jeff, and a couple of other colleagues went and did the NC500. And I was looking through pictures of it to overlay for this video. And I just thought, oh, I have to go and do that. So yeah, all going well this year, I will make that happen.
Yeah. I mean,
sounds good.
My conclusion from that trip in 2019, actually, when we did the NC500, if you're in a car that you love, you will love that trip even more.
Yeah.
Because you don't need a superpower car or anything like that. Like I did it in the 1.6 MX-5, but it was just brilliant.
Yeah, exactly.
Just so much cracking scenery, very remote at times, of course. And it feels like you're on a proper adventure.
Yeah, I'm so keen. If I can make that happen this year and all going well, I will. I cannot wait.
Well, look, that sounds like bucket list stuff, Joe. Make it happen. But
I will.
Mine's a little bit further afield, actually. It's 100 years of Route 66 this year.
Is it really? Wow.
That's cool.
I believe so. But I'm not going to do Route 66 because that's too obvious. But I would like to go to America. I've done a couple of memorable road trips in the US. And the one I'd really like to do, which I haven't done, is the West Coast. We actually stayed in Laguna Beach years ago, and it's quite a nice little artsy suburb. And I'd probably start there and then just wind my way up the West Coast, going all the way up across the border to Vancouver. I have no idea how long it would take, and I would quite happily just take my time. And I would do it in a X100 generation Jaguar XK. I would make it the convertible because California. I've had some great road trip memories in Jaguars of that kind of era, XKs and XJs. I drove across America in an XJ. That West Coast piece, because I think you go from lots of different scenery and terrain, actually. You'd start with very sort of sandy, wide open beaches and stuff, and the terrain would get more varied and more luscious as you go up the coast. As a Michael J. Fox fan, the star of Back to the Future, he often talked about driving from Vancouver down to LA to attend auditions, and he wouldn't think much of it. But I just think that would be a really memorable trip. I think I'd really like to do that. And one day I'll make that happen. But yes, do let us know in the comments, if you're watching this, what your dream road trip would be. We'd love to hear your own road trip experiences. It would be great to hear from you, because I don't think it matters whether you're poodling around your sort of local area in a beaten up old patinaed classic, or you're doing a dream drive across Europe or something in a E-Type or a Porsche 911. I think a road trip can mean whatever it wants to mean for you. So be lovely to hear your experiences. So do let us know. Anyway, onto perhaps more pragmatic matters. What's everyone up to in the near future that involves their cars? What about you, Jeff?
Well, Joe, like this one. I'm going to Poland.
Hey, excellent.
In about half an hour. I'm going to the International Mini Me Ting in Leszno in Poland. I will confess, I'm not going in my Mini. I'm going by Airbus. But just due to the lack of holiday really available. But really looking forward to it. Absolutely. If you don't know about the International Mini Meeting, it happens on a nomadic basis every year in Poland this year. And then we've got Portugal to look forward to in 2027.
Amazing.
Yeah, I'm really excited.
Very excellent. Good. What about you, Joe?
Mine's going to be an interesting one. So my girlfriend's car has been broken for quite some months now, her Volvo C30. I won't bore you with the details, but modern car problems means it's not been as simple as change a component. And the horrors of canvas wiring and voltage control modules have been haunting us for us to then find out that the fault was 2 inches of wire that had chafed on a fan shroud. But as a result, her car is now back on the road for the first time in 4 months, 5 months. The weather is looking promising, so we're going to go and hoon around some roads, which I just said, let's just set aside a day and just go and make up for lost time. So we're going to go and take some nice pictures, go for a bit of a thrash, maybe get some food, just go and enjoy our cars, which I think is what we should be doing now the weather's good. So yeah, I can't promise we'll be the most social drivers out there, but we will be having a lot of fun.
Lovely. Well, that sounds glorious. Well, it all sounds way more interesting than my immediate weekend, because this coming weekend is probably going to be almost deliberately car free, mainly because the following weekend, the 6th and 7th of June, me and you, Joe, are heading to Tatton Park for
yes,
the Practical Performance Spectacular, which is one of our three events that we run up in Cheshire at the lovely Tatton Park grounds. There's normally an absolutely glorious selection of cars up there. Now, I actually haven't been to this event before, but you did last year, didn't you, from memory?
I did, it was brilliant.
I think the collection of cars up there is wonderfully varied, and I'm really looking forward to having a mooch round. I think there's still tickets available, so we'll probably put a link in the description so you can go and buy some tickets if you fancy joining us. That's just over a week from today, in fact. So yeah, very much looking forward to that. Yeah, lots to look forward to. But anyway, our final segment, of course, is cars that have piqued our interest, that you've been researching online, fantasizing about owning one at some point in the future. So Jeff, start us off.
I'm going back to the Balkans here and the Adriatic coast again. When I went to Montenegro some years ago, just before COVID, I stayed in a really nice hotel and there was a scrap Renault 4 festering in a corner of the car park, which was really down at heel, covered in moss, obviously not being used for years, until the receptionist came out, got in it and drove off. and it was being used daily. And I was shocked at sort of how resilient this car was. Quite a lot of them were made in the sort of ex-Yugoslavia, a place called Novo Mesto in Slovenia. So there's a few out in the Balkans. I've just always fancied one. From that little experience, it was just enough to think, I quite like the idea of one of those. And so I've been looking. Good. Finding a right-hand drive one is a challenge. So it would probably have to be a left-hand drive car.
You're always looking at some random classified site in Serbia or something, so you'll probably find one over there, so it'll be fine.
With a budget of around 5,000, you'll get something really nice. So that's this week's want.
That sounds great. What about you, Joe?
On a similar vein of utilitarian and basic and possibly slightly rusty, I'm deviating from my norm. I fancy a Land Rover this week. I've been particularly looking at Series 2 and Series 3s. So for context, this Sunday is our Living with a Classic Land Rover video. And the owner, Colin, was absolutely fabulous. And he was, you know, he bought it to tow a trailer, basically, and then just forgot to get rid of it for the next 30 years. And it's beautifully patinated and slightly raggedy, as a Land Rover should be. And you bounce around and this thing's rattling in the back. I've dismissed Land Rovers for years. And then the first time I drove a 90, and then I've driven a Series 2 and a Series 3 after that, every time I experience an old Land Rover, I still don't see the value in these. I don't see how people can pay as much as they pay for them, but I can absolutely see the appeal. And I think they're utterly charming. So yeah, I would love just a slightly tatty Series 2 or Series 3 just to bumble around in, because I think they're charming.
For context, that guy, Colin, that owns the Land Rover, he also owns the Ferrari Mondial that we featured on the channel.
Yes, he does. And he owns a 57 Chevy Bel Air we'll be featuring soon.
Which will also be up on the channel very soon. So an absolutely eclectic mix if ever I saw one. But
yeah, it's an old Land Rover for me this week. I could see me, you know, flat cap and tweed jacket in my old age, bumbling around the lanes in one of those.
Well, look, that sounds fabulous. Now, I don't know whether it's because we've been talking about road trips this week, but I went down a rabbit hole of wanting to buy an old camper van. Dig around on the channel, you'll find a trading up challenge where I bought a 1985 Honda Acti Roma home, which kind of, it harks back to that really. But I've got a Nissan Elgren camper van, which we've mentioned before in the channel, and there's a video coming out in the not too distant future, I believe, on that. Besides that, I've got this idea in my head that I wouldn't mind buying one day a classic camper van, but then modernize it inside. So it's got all the modern accoutrements that you can get these days with rock and roll beds and little kitchenettes and things. So, I mean, I was just mooching around, but I mean, how charming is something like this? A 1989 Talbot Express. I mean, there weren't any Talbots by
the
then.
The final
really.
Talbot, yes.
Yeah. $8,500, bit tatty, but do you know what? That's the perfect base car for it. Or even better, this is actually overseas for just under 5,000 euros.
Mark II Transit
camper van.
It's over in France. We need to go buy it immediately.
It's over in France. Uprate it inside. Charming little thing. It's a left-hand drive, that one, because it's in France. But if you're tootling around Europe in it, wonderful. I would have one of those. So yeah, an old camper van, please, would be very much part of my choices. But
we've got some very humble wants of the week this week. Very sort of charming and basic.
Yep, that's who we are. That is the Classics World Chat Show. And that probably should call it to a close, this particular episode. But it was wonderful going on your various road trips with you. And we've hopefully inspired a few of you to get back out in your classic cars and go and enjoy them on some lovely open roads somewhere, wherever they are. But yes, thank you very much for your time, whether you're watching this on YouTube or listening to it on one of the Maybe you're watching it on YouTube or listening to one of the many podcast platforms of choice. Do give us a follow or a like and a subscribe. And yes, we will see you all again next time. Thanks very much for listening, and we'll see you then. Take care.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
It was all going so well.